This is tape number two, side A, recording an untitled collection of readings on the lives of holy virgins. The book was compiled and edited in 1997 by Barbara Swieziak of La Crosse, Wisconsin. It contains original copyrighted materials and is intended for private use only. The following readings by the 5th century Saint Synclitica come to us from the Sayings of the Desert Fathers, translated by Benedicta Ward. To continue, Saint Synclitica also said, "If illness weighs us down, let us not be sorrowful, as though because of illness and the prostration of our bodies we could not sing. For all these things are for our good, for the purification of our desires. Truly, fasting and sleeping on the ground are set before us because of sensuality. If illness then weakens this sensuality, the reason for these practices is superfluous. For this is the great asceticism, to control oneself in illness and to sing hymns of thanksgiving to God." She also said, "When you fast, do not pretend illness, for those who do not fast often fall into real sickness. If you have begun to act well, do not turn back through constraint of the enemy, for through your endurance the enemy is destroyed. Those who put out to sea at first sail with a favorable wind, then the sails spread, but later the winds become adverse. Then the ship is tossed by the waves and is no longer controlled by the rudder. But when in a little while there is calm and the tempest dies down, then the ship sails on again. So it is with us. When we are driven by the spirits who are against us, we hold to the cross as our sail, and so we can set a safe course." She also said, "Those who have endured the labors and dangers of the sea, and then amass the material riches, even when they have gained much, desire to gain yet more, and they consider what they have at present as nothing, and reach out for what they have not got. We who have nothing of that which we desire, wish to acquire everything through the fear of God." She also said, "Imitate the publican, and you will not be condemned with the Pharisee. Choose the meekness of Moses, and you will find your heart, which is a rock, changed into a spring of water." She also said, "It is dangerous for anyone to teach who has not first been trained in the practical life. For if someone who owns a ruined house receives guests there, he does them harm because of the dilapidation of his dwelling. It is the same in the case of someone who has not first built an interior dwelling. He causes loss to those who come. By words one may convert them to salvation, but by evil behavior one injures them." She also said, "It is not good to get angry, but if this should happen, the apostle does not allow you a whole day for this passion, for he says, 'Let not the sun go down.' Will you wait till all your time is ended? Why hate the man who has grieved you? It is not he who has done the wrong, but the devil. Hate sickness, but not the sick person." She also said, "Those who are great athletes must contend against stronger enemies." She also said, "There is an asceticism which is determined by the enemy, and his disciples practice it. So how are we to distinguish between the divine and royal asceticism and the demonic tyranny? Clearly through its quality of balance. Always use a single rule of fasting. Do not fast 4 or 5 days and break it the following day with any amount of food. In truth, lack of proportion always corrupts. While you are young and healthy, fast, for old age with its weakness will come. As long as you can, lay up treasure, so that when you cannot, you will be at peace. She also said, It is written, Be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Being like serpents means not ignoring attacks and wiles of the devil. Like is quickly known to like. The simplicity of doves denotes purity of action. Amos Sincletica said, There are many who live in the mountains and behave as if they were in town, and they are wasting their time. It is possible to be solitary in one's mind while living in a crowd, and it is possible for one who is solitary to live in the crowd of his own thoughts. She also said, In the world, if we commit an offense, even an involuntary one, we are thrown into prison. Let us likewise cast ourselves into prison because of our sins, so that voluntary remembrance may anticipate the punishment that is to come. She also said, Just as a treasure that is exposed loses its value, so a virtue which is known vanishes. Just as wax melts when it is near fire, so the soul is destroyed by praise and loses all the results of its labor. She also said, Just as it is impossible to be at the same moment both a plant and a seed, so it is impossible for us to be surrounded by worldly honor and at the same time to bear heavenly fruit. She also said, My children, we all want to be saved, but because of our habit of negligence, we swerve away from salvation. She also said, We must arm ourselves in every way against the demons, for they attack us from outside, and they also stir us up from within. And the soul is then like a ship when great waves break over it, and at the same time it sinks because the hold is too full. We are just like that. We lose as much by exterior faults we commit as by the thoughts inside us. So we must watch for the attacks of men that come from outside us, and also repel the interior onslaughts of our thoughts. She also said, Here below we are not exempt from temptations, for Scripture says, Let him who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. We sail on in darkness. The psalmist calls our life a sea, and the sea is either full of rocks or very rough, or else it is calm. We are like those who sail on a calm sea, and seculars are like those on a rough sea. We always set our course by the Sun of Justice, but it can often happen that the secular is saved in tempest and darkness, for he keeps watch as he ought, while we go down through negligence, although we are on calm sea, because we have let go of the guidance of justice. She also said, Just as one cannot build a ship unless one has some nails, so it is impossible to be saved without humility. She also said, There is grief that is useful, and there is grief that is destructive. The first sort consists in weeping over one's own faults and weeping over the weakness of one's neighbors in order not to destroy one's purpose and attach oneself to the perfect good. But there is also grief that comes from the enemy, full of mockery. This spirit must be cast out, mainly by prayer and psalmody. On January 18th, the Church recognizes the virginity and martyrdom of Saint Prisca. Dr. Pius Parsh, in the Church's Year of Grace, tells us the following about Saint Prisca. The martyrology reads, "In the city of Rome, the Holy Virgin and martyr Prisca, after many tortures, she gained the crown of martyrdom under Emperor Claudius II, about 270. Prisca should not be confused with Priscilla, the wife of Aquila, mentioned in the Acts, whose feast dates to the earliest days of Christianity." January 21st is the feast of Saint Agnes. About this very famous and beloved young virgin and martyr, Reverend Bernard Huang has said, "Her innocence and her courage to lay down her life for Jesus Christ, her beloved bridegroom, at the tender age of 12, is not just inspiration, but encouragement for the consecrated virgins of today to suffer a little more bravely for the same cause and the same bridegroom." From Butler's Lives of the Saints, Saint Agnes has always been looked upon in the church as a special patroness of bodily purity. She is one of the most popular of Christian saints, and her name is commemorated every day in the canon of the Mass. Rome was the scene of her triumph, and Prudentius says that her tomb was shown within sight of that city. She suffered perhaps not long after the beginning of the persecution of Diocletian, whose cruel edicts were published in March in the year 303. We learn from St. Ambrose and St. Augustine that she was only 13 years of age at the time of her glorious death. Her riches and beauty excited the young noblemen of the first families in Rome to contend as rivals for her hand. Agnes answered them all that she had consecrated her virginity to a heavenly husband who could not be beheld by mortal eyes. Her suitors, finding her resolution unshakable, accused her to the governor as a Christian, not doubting that threats and torments would prove more effective with one of tender years on whom allurements could make no impression. The judge at first employed the mildest expressions and most seductive promises, to which Agnes paid no regard, repeating always that she would have no other spouse but Jesus Christ. He then made use of threats, but found her endowed with a masculine courage, and even eager to suffer torment and death. At last, terrible fires were made, and iron hooks and racks and other instruments of torture displayed before her, with threats of immediate execution. The heroic child surveyed them undismayed, and made good cheer in the presence of the fierce and cruel executioners. She was so far from betraying the least symptom of terror that she even expressed her joy at the sight and offered herself to the rack. She was then dragged before the idols and commanded to offer incense, but could, St. Ambrose tells us, by no means be compelled to move her hand except to make the sign of the cross. The governor, seeing his measures ineffectual, said he would send her to a house of prostitution, where what she prized so highly should be exposed to the insults of brutal and licentious youth of Rome. On such vile methods of breaking down the constancy of Christian maidenhood, Tertullian, in his Apologia, comments as follows: "By condemning the Christian maid rather to the lewd youth than to the lion, you have acknowledged that a stain of purity is more dreaded by us than any torments or death. Yet your cruel cunning avails you not, but rather serves to gain men over to our holy religion." Agnes answered that Jesus Christ was too jealous of the purity of his chosen ones to suffer them to be violated in such a manner, for he was their defender and protector. "You may," she said, "stain your sword with my blood, but you will never be able to profane my body, consecrated to Christ." The governor was so incensed at this that he ordered her to be immediately led to that place of shame, with liberty to all to abuse her person at pleasure. Many young profligates ran thither full of wicked desires, but were seized with such awe at the sight of the saint that they durst not approach her. One only accepted, who, attempting to be rude to her, was that very instant, by a flash, as it were of lightning from heaven, struck blind, and fell trembling to the ground. His companions, terrified, took him up and carried him to Agnes, who was singing hymns of praise to Christ, her protector. The Virgin, by prayer, restored his sight and his health. The chief accuser of the saint, who had at first sought to gratify his lust and avarice, now in a spirit of vindictiveness incited the judge against her. His passionate fondness changed to fury. The governor needed no encouragement, for he was highly exasperated to see himself set at defiance by one of her tender age and sex. Being resolved, therefore, upon her death, he condemned her to be beheaded. Agnes, filled with joy on hearing this sentence, went to the place of execution more cheerfully, says St. Ambrose, than others go to their wedding. The executioner had instructions to use all means to induce her to give way, but Agnes remained constant, and having made a short prayer, bowed her neck to receive the death stroke. The spectators shed tears to see this beautiful child loaded with fetters and offering herself fearlessly to the sword of the executioner, who with trembling hand cut off her head in one stroke. Her body was buried at a short distance from Rome, beside the Nomentana road. It is necessary to add to the account, based mainly on Prudentius, that modern authorities incline to the view that little reliance can be placed on the details of the story. They point out that the acts of St. Agnes, attributed unwarrantably to St. Ambrose, can hardly be older than A.D. 415, and that these seem to represent an attempt to harmonize and embroider the discordant data found in the then surviving traditions. St. Ambrose, in his quite genuine 4th-century sermon, says of St. Agnes's martyrdom, "Servicem inflexit," she bent her neck, from which it is commonly inferred that she was decapitated. This view is supported by Prudentius's explicit statement that her head was struck off at one blow. In early Latin hymns, A.S. Walpole urges that the word inflexit may mean bent aside in order to admit the point of the sword, and quotes parallel passages from the classics in support of this view. There can be no question that stabbing in the throat was a common way of dispatching the condemned and was regarded as the most merciful form of execution. On the other hand, the epitaph written by Pope St. Damasus speaks of flames, and beyond this says nothing as to the manner of Agnes's death. While from the beautiful hymn Agnes Beate Virginis, a genuine work of St. Ambrose, it clearly follows that she was not beheaded, otherwise she could not, after the blow was struck, have drawn her cloak modestly around her and have covered her face with her hand. It seems plain that she was stabbed in the throat or breast. From these apparent contradictions, many critics concluded that already in the second half of the 4th century, all memory of the exact circumstances of the martyrdom had been forgotten, and that only vague tradition survived. In any case, however, there can be no possible doubt of the fact that St. Agnes was martyred, and that she was buried beside the Via Nomentana in the cemetery afterwards called by her name. Here a basilica was erected in her honor before 354 by Constantina, daughter of Constantine and wife of Gallus. And the terms of the acrostic inscription set up in the apse are still preserved. But it tells nothing about St. Agnes except that she was a virgin and victorious. Again, the name of St. Agnes is entered in the list of martyrs of AD 354 under the date January 21, together with the place of her burial. There is also abundant subsidiary evidence of early cultus in the frequent occurrence of representations of the child martyr, and in the prominence given to her name in all kinds of Christian literature. "Agnes, Tecla, and Mary were with me," said St. Martin to Sulpicius Severus, where he seems to assign precedence to Agnes even above our Blessed Lady. St. Agnes is, as remarked above, one of the saints named in the canon of the Mass. It is quite possible that Father Jubaru is right in his attempt to reconcile the data supplied by Pope Damasus and St. Ambrose, but it would not follow as a necessary consequence that he is also right in his theory that in the Greek Acts we have an amalgamation of the story of two different Saints Agnes. With regard to the great Saint Agnes, he contends that she was a child in Rome, that she consecrated to God her virginity, that she turned away from all suitors, and when persecution came, that she deliberately left her parents' home and offered herself to martyrdom, that she was threatened with death by fire in an attempt to shake her constancy, but that, as she gave no sign of yielding, she was in fact stabbed in the throat. Father Jubaru, in his elaborate monograph, further claims to have discovered the reliquary containing the greater portion of the skull of the youthful martyr in the treasury of the Sancta Sanctorum at the Lateran. This treasury was opened in 1903 after it had been hidden from view for many hundred years, permission to do so having been obtained from Pope Leo XIII. The relic is considered by Father Grieser, the Jesuit, and by many other archaeologists to be in all probability authentic, since a regular custom had grown up in the 9th century of separating the head from the rest of the bones when entire bodies of saints were enshrined in the churches. It also seems that the body of St. Agnes was at that date preserved under the altar of her basilica, and further, that on opening the case in 1605, it was found without a head. From a medical examination of the fragments of the skull in the Sancta Sanctorum, Dr. Laponi pronounced that the teeth showed conclusively that the head was that of a child about 13 years of age. The more extravagant miracles which occur in the so-called Acts are now admitted by all to be a fiction of the biographer. The case of St. Agnes is therefore typical and affords conclusive proof that the preposterous legends so often invented by later writers who wish to glorify the memory of a favorite saint cannot in themselves be accepted as proof that the martyrdom is fabulous and that the saint never existed. In art, St. Agnes is commonly represented with a lamb and a palm, the lamb no doubt being originally suggested by the resemblance of the word agnus, a lamb, to the name Agnes. In Rome, on the feast of St. Agnes each year, while the choir in her church on the Via Nomentana are singing the antiphon, two white lambs are offered at the sanctuary rails. They are blessed and then cared for until the time comes for shearing them. Out of their wool are woven the pallia, which on the vigil of Saints Peter and Paul are laid upon the altar at St. Peter's, immediately over the body of the apostle. These pallia are sent to archbishops throughout the Western Church from the body of Blessed St. Peter, in token of the jurisdiction which they derive from the Holy See, the center of religious authority. Further information about St. Agnes is contained in The Church's Year of Grace by Dr. Pius Parsh. In St. Agnes, the heroic virgin bride of God, the Church sees herself. She therefore offers us an intimate view of the virgin martyr's soul, aglow with divine love. The divine office for her feast is another canticle of canticles, a nuptial hymn of the Church to her heavenly bridegroom. Our soul, too, is an image of the Church and should become an Agnes. How well our feast reflects the marriage motif of the Epiphany season. St. Agnes's day of death is presumed to be January 21st, toward the close of the 3rd century. Her grave in Rome, at the church named in her honor. She is pictured as a young maiden with a martyr's crown and a lamb. Agnes is one of the most glorious saints in the calendar of the Roman Church. The greatest church fathers vie with one another in sounding her praise and glory. Saint Jerome writes, "All nations, especially Christian communities, praise in word and writing the life of Saint Agnes. She triumphed over her tender age as well as over the merciless tyrant. To the crown of spotless innocence, she added the glory of martyrdom." Our saint's name should be traced to the Greek word hagne, the pure, rather than to the Latin agna, lamb. But the Latin derivation prevailed in the early church. The reason may have been that 8 days after her death, Agnes appeared to her parents with a train of virgins and a lamb at her side. Saint Augustine knew both derivations. Agnes, he writes, means lamb in Latin, but in Greek it denotes the pure one. The Latin interpretation occasioned the yearly blessing of the St. Agnes lambs. It takes place on this day in the church of which she is patron, and the wool is used in weaving the palliums worn by archbishops and through privilege by some bishops. In the church built by the Emperor Constantine over the saint's grave, Pope Gregory the Great preached a number of homilies. Reliable details concerning the life of St. Agnes are very few. The oldest material occurs in St. Ambrose's De Virginibus, which forms the third lesson. Today is the birthday of a virgin. Let us imitate her virginal innocence. It is the birthday of a martyr. Let us also bring sacrifice. It is the birthday of St. Agnes. Let men look up in admiration and children not be disheartened. You married, be filled with wonder. You unmarried, follow in her footsteps. But where shall we find words of adequate praise, since her very name bespeaks her glory and renown? In her, we see a devotion that far surpasses her age, a virtue that exceeds all power of nature. Hence it seems to me that she had not merely a human name, but prophetically she was given the name of a martyr, to indicate beforehand what she was to be. The name of our Virgin is a guarantee of her purity. If I call her a martyr, already I have praised enough. For that is great praise indeed, which one does not need to seek, but is freely given by others. No one can be more praised than one who is praised by all. As many men, so many encomiums. They have only to mention her name to praise her as a martyr. According to tradition, it was in her 13th year that she suffered martyrdom. How despicable the cruelty that spared not even this tender age, but how great the power of faith that found even that age its witness. In her tender body, was there room for wounds? She had scarcely a place for the iron of death to strike, yet had the courage to overcome all tortures. Before the blood-reeking hands of the executioners, she stands unafraid and is not even shaken by the fear-inspiring clang of heavy iron chains. She is prepared to offer her whole body to the murderous sword of the savage executioner. When still too young to know what death is, against her will, she is dragged to the altars of pagan gods. In the midst of flames, she stretches out her arms toward Christ. And in the temple of idolatrous sacrifice, she does not hesitate to sign herself with the victorious sign of the Lord. She is ready to deliver her hands and neck to shackles of iron, yet no chains could enclose such delicate members. A new kind of martyrdom, a virgin still immature for torture, yet mature for triumph. Unsuited for combat, yet become worthy of the crown of victory. She was a teacher of virtue despite her youth. No bride ever hastens to the nuptial chamber with such joy and alacrity as Agnes hastened to the place of execution. All weep, but she sheds not a tear. All marvel that one who hardly tasted life should surrender it so lightly, as though already wearied by it. And all wonder how one still too young to rule her own life should prove a witness for God. What a dreadful manner the executioner assumed that he might inspire her with dread. How he used flattery and coaxing to lead her to apostasy. And how many there were who wished to bring her home as a bride. But she declared, "It is an injustice against the bridegroom to keep him waiting for his chosen one. He that first chose me for himself shall have me. Executioner, why delay you? Let this body perish, which only pleases eyes that please me not." Standing there, she prayed, then bent her neck to the executioner. You could see him tremble as though he were the condemned. His right hand faltered, his face paled with fear of another's peril. But the young maiden did not fear. Thus, one immolation, you witness two martyrdoms, one for virginity and one for faith. A virgin she remained, and the martyr's crown obtained. In the Holy Mass, the office of the feast approaches poetry. Its tone is highly lyrical. By way of contrast, the Mass formulary shows restraint and classic reticence. A beautiful bridal Mass, it was first proper to the Feast of St. Agnes, but later served as model for the common of virgins. The parable of the wise virgins is its dominant feature. Closely linked with the parable is Psalm 44, the Church's nuptial song. Today, Agnes exemplifies Christ's bride, the Church. At the introit, we join our saint as she forsakes the hostile world plotting her ruin, for we are determined to walk the blessed way of the undefiled in her company. At the offertory, we see the Church, the Virgin Bride, uniting her sacrifice with Christ's redemptive sacrifice. She is accompanied by a multitude clothed in white, with Agnes leading. The communion verse repeats the leitmotif. Behold, the bridegroom comes. Go forth to meet him. Remember that these words were sung at night in the darkness of the catacomb where the saint lay buried. Imagine the impression they must have made when the hope of Christ's early return was still cherished in men's hearts. In the post-communion, now that we have been nourished by a heavenly food and drink, we humbly implore you, our God, for protection through the prayers of her in whose memory we have received it. Amen. The Reverend Charles E. Yost, a priest of the Sacred Heart, discusses St. Agnes in his book titled, In His Likeness, Homilies for Liturgies in Honor of the Saints. Of the early Roman virgin martyrs, we know little other than what legend tells us, or what we learn from some of the great fathers who left us sermons commemorating celebrations in honor of these heroic young women. Saint Agnes is said to have suffered martyrdom at the age of 12. The cruelty that did not spare her youth shows all the more clearly the power of faith in finding one so young to bear it witness, according to St. Ambrose. The martyrdom of St. Agnes is factual, but the details are legendary. A beautiful young girl of a wealthy family, she resolved early to live purely and to consecrate her virginity to God. This was not an uncommon practice even in the 3rd century. Denounced by unsuccessful suitors, she was sent to a house of prostitution. There, she successfully preserved her virginity by her saintly conduct, and in one instance by a miracle. She was ordered beheaded or stabbed in the throat. Saint Ambrose remarked that she was too young to know of death, yet ready to face it. The opening prayer of Mass tells us that God chooses what the world considers weak to put the worldly power to shame. St. Ambrose continues, "In the midst of tears, she sheds no tears herself. The crowds marvel at her recklessness in throwing away her life untasted, as if she had already lived life to the full. All are amazed that one not yet of legal age can give her testimony to God, though her testimony in human affairs could not yet be accepted. What is beyond the power of nature, they argue, must come from its creator. While still so young, she overcame death and found true life." This next group of readings for the Feast of St. Agnes, January 21st, is taken from the liturgical year by Abbot Géranger. How rich is the constellation of martyrs which shines in this portion of the sacred cycle. Yesterday we had St. Sebastian. Tomorrow we shall be singing the name which means victory, for it is the Feast of St. Vincent. And now, today, between these two rich palm branches, we are rejoiced with a lovely rose and lily wreath of Agnes. It is to a girl of 13 that our Emmanuel gave this stern courage of martyrdom, which made her meet the enemy with as bold a front as either the valiant captain of the Praetorian band or the dauntless deacon of Saragossa. If they are the soldiers of Jesus, she is his tender and devoted spouse. These are the triumphs of the Son of Mary. Scarcely has he shown himself to the world, and lo, every noble heart flies toward him, according to that word of his, "Wheresoever the body shall be, there shall the eagles also be gathered together." It is the admirable result of the virginity of his Blessed Mother, who has brought honor to the fecundity of the soul and set it far above that of the body. It was Mary that first opened the way, whereby certain chosen souls mount up even to the divine Son and fix their gaze in a cloudless vision on his beauty. For he himself said, "Blessed are the clean of heart, for they shall see God." What glory is it not for the Catholic Church that she alone has the gift of this holy state of virginity, which is the source of every other sacrifice, because nothing but the love of God could inspire a human heart to vow virginity. And what a grand honor for Christian Rome that she should have produced a Saint Agnes, that angel of earth, in comparison with whom the vestals of paganism are mere pretenses of devotedness, for their virginity was never punished by fire and sword, nay, rather was flattered by the recompense of earthly honors and riches. Not that our saint is without her recompense, only her recompense is not marred with the flaw of all human rewards. The name of this child, who lived but 13 short years, will be echoed to the end of time in the sacred canon of the universal sacrifice. The path trod by the innocent maiden on the way to her trial is still marked out in the holy city. In the Circus Agonalis, there rises the beautiful church of St. Agnes with its rich cupola, and beneath are the vaults which were once the haunts of infamy, but now are a holy sanctuary where everything reminds us of her who here won her glorious victory. Further on the Nomentana Road, outside the ramparts, is the beautiful basilica built by Constantine. And here, under an altar covered with precious stones, lies the body of the young saint. Round this basilica there are immense crypts, and in these did Agnes's relics repose until the epoch of peace, surrounded by thousands of martyrs, whose holy remains were also deposited here. Nor must we pass over in silence the gracious tribute of honor paid by Rome each year on this feast to her beloved martyr. Two lambs are placed on the altar of the Basilica Nomentana. They are emblems of the meekness of Jesus and the innocence of the gentle Agnes. After they have been blessed by the abbot of the religious community which serves this church, they are taken to a monastery of nuns where they are carefully reared. Their wool is used for the making of the palliums which the Pope sends to all patriarchs and metropolitans of the Catholic world as the essential emblem of their jurisdiction. Thus, this simple woolen ornament, which these prelates have to wear on their shoulders as a symbol of the sheep carried on the shoulders of the Good Shepherd, and which the sovereign pontiff takes from off the altar of St. Peter in order to send it to its destination, carries to the very ends of the world the sublime union of these two sentiments, the vigor and power of the Prince of the Apostles and the gentleness of Agnes the Virgin. We will now quote the beautiful eulogium on St. Agnes written by St. Ambrose in his book on Virgins. The Church gives almost the entire passage in her office of today's feast, and assuredly the Virgin of Christ could not have a finer panegyrist than the great Bishop of Milan, who is the most eloquent and persuasive of all the fathers on the subject of holy virginity. We read that in the cities where Ambrose preached, mothers were afraid of their daughters being present at his sermons, lest he should persuade them to such love of Christ as to choose the better part. Having resolved, says the holy bishop, to write a book on virginity, I think myself happy in being able to begin it on the feast we are keeping of the Virgin Agnes. It is the feast of a martyr. Let us offer up our sacrifice. It is the feast of St. Agnes. Let men admire and children not despair. Let the married wonder and the unmarried imitate. But what can we speak worthy of this saint, whose very name is not void of praise? As her devotedness is beyond her years and her virtue superhuman, so, as it seems to me, her name is not an appellation but a prophecy, presaging that she was to be a martyr. The holy doctor is here alluding to the word Agnus, from which some have derived the name Agnes, and he says that the young saint had immolation in her very name, for it called her victim. He goes on to consider the other etymology of Agnes, from the Greek word Agnos, which means pure, and he thus continues his discourse. The maiden's name is an expression of purity. Martyr, then, and virgin, is not that praise enough? There is no praise so eloquent as merit that is too great to need seeking. No one is so praiseworthy as he who may be praised by all. Now all men are the praisers of Agnes, For when they pronounce her name, they say her praise, for they say a martyr. There is a tradition that she suffered martyrdom at the age of 13. Detestable indeed the cruelty that spared not even so tender an age, but oh, the power of faith that could find even children to be its witnesses. Here was a victim scarce big enough for a wound, for where could the sword fall? And yet she had courage enough to conquer the sword. At such an age as this, a girl trembles if she but see her mother angry, and cries, as though it were a grievous thing, if not but pricked with a needle's point. And Agnes, who stands amidst blood-stained murderers, is fearless. She is stunned with the rattle of the heavy chains, and yet not a flutter in that heart. She offers her whole body to the sword of the furious soldier, for though she knows not what death is, yet she is quite ready to endure it. Perchance they will take her by force to the altars of their gods. If they do, she will stretch out her hands to Jesus, and amidst those sacrilegious fires, she will sign herself with that blessed sign, the trophy of our divine conqueror. And then if they will, and they can find shackles small enough to fit such tender limbs, they may fasten her hands and neck in their iron fetters. How strange a martyrdom! She is too young to be punished, yet she is old enough to win a victory. She cannot fight, yet she easily gains a crown. She has but the age of a scholar, yet has she mastered every virtue. Bride never went to nuptials with so glad a heart or so light a step as this young virgin marches to the place of execution. She is decked not with the gay show of plaited tresses, but with Christ. She is wreathed not with flowers, but with purity. All stood weeping. Agnes shed not a tear. Some wondered how it could be that she, who had but just begun her life, should be as ready to sacrifice it as though she had lived it out. And everyone was amazed that she, who was too young to give evidence even in her own affairs, should be so bold a witness of the divinity. Her oath would be invalid in a human cause, yet she is believed when she bears testimony for her God. Their surprise was just, for a power thus above nature could only come from Him who is the author of all nature. Her executioner does all he can to frighten her. He speaks fair words to coax her. He tells her of all the suitors who have sought her as their bride, but she replies, "The spouse insults her beloved if she hesitate. I belong to Him who first betrothed me. Why, executioner, dost thou not strike? Kill this body which might be loved by the eyes I would not wish to please." She stood, she prayed, she bowed her head. The executioner trembles as though himself were going to be beheaded. His hand shakes and his cheek grows pale to strike this girl who loves the danger and the blow. Here then, have we a twofold martyrdom in a single victim, one for her chastity, the other for her faith. She was a virgin before, and now she is a martyr. The Roman Church sings on this feast the sweet responsories in which Agnes expresses her tender love of her Jesus and her happiness at having him for her spouse. They are formed from the words of the ancient acts of her martyrdom, which were long attributed to the pen of St. Ambrose. "My spouse has set precious stones on my right hand and on my neck. He has hung priceless pearls in my ears, and he has laden me with gay and glittering gems. He has placed his sign upon my face, that I may have none other to love me but him. And he has laden me with gay and glittering gems. I love Christ. I shall be the spouse of him whose mother is the Virgin, and whose father begot him divinely, and who delights me with sweet music of organs and singers. When I love him, I am chaste. When near him, I am purest. When I possess him, I still wear my virgin's wreath. He has betrothed me with the ring of his fidelity, and has decked me with a necklace of priceless worth. When I love him, I am chaste. When near him, I am purest. When I possess him, I still wear my virgin's wreath. Milk and honey have I received from his lips, and his blood has graced my cheek. He has shown me incomparable treasures, and these has he promised to give me, and his blood has graced my cheek. Already have I communicated of his sacred body, and his blood has graced my cheek. His mother is the Virgin, his father is God. I am espoused to him whom the angels obey, and whose beauty is gazed on by the sun and the moon. His mother is the Virgin, his father is God. Saint Ambrose was sure to write a hymn on the Virgin Martyr, in whose praise he was so enthusiastic. We almost despair of giving an idea of the beauty of his verses to such as can read only our version of them. The hymn. It is the Blessed Virgin Agnes's feast, for today she was sanctified by shedding her innocent blood, and gave to heaven her heaven-claimed spirit. She that was too young to be a bride was old enough to be a martyr, and that, too, in an age where men were faltering in faith, and even hoary heads grew wearied and denied our God. Her parents trembled for their Agnes, and doubly did they thus defend the treasure of her purity. But her faith disdains a silent hiding place and unlocks its shelter-giving gate. One would think it was a bride hurrying with glad smiles to give some fresh-got present to her spouse. And so it was. She was bearing to him the dowry of her martyrdom. They would fain make her light a torch at the altar of some vile deity they came to. The virgins of Jesus, said Agnes, are not wont to hold a torch like this. Its fires would quench one's faith. Its flame would put out my light. Strike, strike me, and the stream of my blood shall extinguish these fires. They strike her to the ground, and as she falls, she gathers her robes around her, dreading in the jealous purity of her soul the insulting gaze of some lewd eye. Alive to purity, even in the act of death, she buries her face in her hands, and kneeling on the ground, she falls as purity would wish to fall. Glory be to thee, O Lord, and glory to thine only begotten Son, together with thy Holy Spirit, for everlasting ages. Amen. Our admirable Prudentius, who visited Rome in the early part of the 5th century and witnessed the devotion of the Roman people to St. Agnes, consecrated to her sweet memory the following hymn, which is one of the finest of his poems. Though very long, it is the hymn used for this feast in the Mozarabic Breviary. The tomb of Agnes, the intrepid maiden, the glorious martyr, is in the city of Romulus. In her resting place, fronting in the ramparts, the Virgin watches over the sons of Quirinus, and to pilgrims, too, that pray to her with pure and faithful hearts, she extends her protection. She is a martyr that wears a double crown, for she was a spotless, innocent virgin and a glorious victim that freely died for Christ. It is related that when a girl and too young to be a bride, she loved Jesus with the tenderest love, and bravely withstood the impious commands that bade her offer sacrifice to the idols and deny the holy faith. No art was left untried to make her yield. The judge put on the softness of winning words, and the grim executioner blustered out his threats. But Agnes stood firm in stern courageousness, bidding them put her body to their fierce tortures, for that she was willing to die. Then spoke the fierce tyrant, "I know thy readiness to suffer pain and tortures, and at how low a price thou settest life, but there is one thing thou holdest dear, a virgin's purity. 'Tis this I have resolved to expose to insult in the common brothel, unless thy head bend before the altar of our virgin goddess Minerva. And thou, a virgin that darest to despise a virgin such as he, shalt humbly crave her pardon. There shall youthful wantons have access, and thou be minister to passion." "And thinkest thou," said Agnes, "that Christ can so forget his children as to let our gold of purity be robbed, and us be outcasts to his care? He is ever with the chaste, shielding from injury the gift he has bestowed of holy virginity. Thy sword may drip, if thou so listest, with our blood, but contamination and dishonor never." Scarce had she said these words than order was given to expose her in the vaults of the well-known street. A throng, indeed, was there, but pity put a veil o'er every eye, and fear imposed respect, save one alone, and gaze, he says, he will. He scorns this modest fear which checks the forward eye, but lo, an angel, swift as lightning, strikes and blinds the wanton wretch. He falls and writhes amid the dust. His fellows raise him from the ground, lifeless as he seems to them, and weeping and lamenting bear the corpse away. Agnes had triumphed, and in a hymn of praise she sings her thanks to God the Father and his Christ, for that they had turned the den of infamy into a shelter for her treasure, and made virginity victorious. Some say that she was asked to pray to Christ that he would restore the prostrate sinner to the vision he had lost. She did so, and the youth regained his consciousness and sight. But this was only one advance in heaven for our saint. A second one is to come. The cruel tyrant boils with furious wrath, and choked with disappointment exclaims, "Shall I be baffled by a girl? Draw the sword, soldier, and do the royal biddings of our sovereign lord." Agnes looked up and saw the savage minion standing with his unsheathed sword, and thus she spoke with beaming face, "Oh, happy, happy change! A wild, fierce, boisterous swordsman for that young, lovesick, smooth-faced, soft-perfumed murderer of the chaste soul. This is a suitor that does please me. I will not run from him nor deny him what he asks. His steel shall nestle in my bosom, and his sword shall warm in my heart's best blood. Thus wedded to my Christ, I shall mount above this dark world to the realms beyond the clouds. Eternal King, the gate of heaven closed to men before thy coming on earth is opened now. Ah, let me enter in. Call to thyself, my Jesus, a soul that seeks but thee, thy virgin spouse and thy father's martyr. Call me, Lord, to thee." Thus did she pray, and then with bended head adored her Lord, and in this posture was the readier to receive the uplifted sword. The soldier's hand was raised, and all the hopes of Agnes were fulfilled, for with a single blow he beheads the holy maiden, and death comes speedily to leave no time for pain. Quickly her spirit quits its garb of flesh and speeds untrammeled through the air, surrounded as it mounts by a choir of lovely angels. She sees this orb of ours far, far below, and all beneath her seems a speck of dark. All earthly things are now so dwindled to her spirit's eye that she looks at them and smiles. Yea, all seems poor. The space traversed by the sun, the globe with all its system, all that lives in the stormy whirlwind of creation and changes with the vain fickleness of the world. Kings and tyrants, empires and grades, and the pompous pageantry of honors big with folly, the sovereignty of gold and silver which all men seek with rabid thirst, and gain by varied crime, sumptuous dwellings, rich colored garbs, mere graceful lies. Wrath and fear, hope and peril, grief so long and joy so brief, black envies, smoky flames which blight men's hopes and fame, and last but worst of all earth's ills, the gloomy cloud of pagan superstition. Agnes sees all this and tramples on them all. She stands and crushes with her foot the serpent's head. This monster with his venom taints all things on earth and plunges into hell the fools that are his slaves. But now he crouching lies beneath a virgin's foot, droops his fiery crest, and dares not raise his vanquished head. And now our God girds with two crowns the virgin martyr's brow. One is a 60-fold light of eternal reward, the other is the 100-fold of fruit. O happy virgin, singular in thy glory, noble inhabitant of heaven, decked with a 2-fold crown, O look upon us who live in misery and sin, for to thee alone did our heavenly Father give the power to change impurity's abode into the shelter of chastity. Fill my heart with the bright ray of thine intercession, and I shall be cleansed. For all is pure that can from thy pity gain a look of loving visit.